find happiness in a world filled with hatred. Cheers. Where do you go? Where do you go? If no one cares and everybody's lost looking for theirs.
It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Well, overwhelmed by information. I'm thinking we have two meetings to do. Well, more than two meetings, but two places to focus our attention. One on the Borough Assembly and its work with the budget. I'd like to start with that. There's some very interesting things that happened on Tuesday with the City of Palmer's meetings, but
yeah.
Let's do the borough first. Wow, this was a little bit of a surprise to me that they, in two special meetings, were able to come to a point where they would agree upon a budget for 2020.
Yeah, it was a little bit surprising to me too, Mike, particularly because they had scheduled so many meetings and had so many conversations about it. And much of it had to do with the fact that the state, where a large majority of their funding comes from, hasn't settled its budget. And they wanted to put it off until the last possible moment, so they'd have a little more certainty, particularly around the issue of the school bond debt reimbursement that, as listeners may recall, the state voters voted on several years ago. The state had agreed to pay 70% of the funding of the bond for construction of six schools, and the borough was responsible for 30%, and this year the governor's budget said that there would be no funding for the 70% match from the state. So that's been going through the process. It's still uncertain where that goes. But I think at the end of the day, the borough assembly realized they had to kind of do as best as they could with the information that they had, set the mill rate, and hope for the best that either the state will come through with their 70% match, or a worst-case scenario with the amount of juggling they've done, they're pretty well covered due to some leftover money from efficiencies that were found in construction of prior projects with schools. And if it comes down to a 50-50 split, they're pretty covered. If the zero comes out of that funding from the state, they're going to have to be back at the table again looking for more cuts.
Right.
So that was kind of the big thing. You know, I normally go with comments at the very end, but I think in this case, Mike, I think the comments after 2 days of deliberations were kind of relevant. Mr. Mayfield made a really good one, I thought, that the conversation a lot was having to do about money, but some of it was just about ideology differences in assembly people, and that was really, really clear.
Wow.
But that they should be able to all agree that the problem was started in Juneau and it was passed down to local government. You know, at the end of the day, they had to compromise, and compromise they did. There were not a record number of amendments. I think I've been through this process at least 10 times, Mike. The mayor said he's been through it 11, so I'd say I probably was
right.
Witness to 10 of these at least. And it's been, I think this year it's fair to say it was much more organized. There were only one amendment that I can think of that was made at the table. All the rest were given in advance. I think the borough.
Let me just point out here, too, since I just reviewed it this morning, I went, and it's important for listeners to understand how transparent this process has become.
Yeah, amazing.
If you go to the borough's website, there's a link right on that front page to the borough mm-hmm. documents. And in particular, the amendments that you mentioned, all of them were listed there, including the manager's comments, so that prior to going to a meeting or taking a look at this, you're quite able to say, all right, this is what is being proposed. And I know that in years past, it would be difficult to understand exactly what the amendment was. You get the materials, and be able to see where that all was going. So kudos to those people on the staff who have put together a very complete picture in comparison to previous budgets that the Borough Assembly has passed.
Both to the borough and to the public for wanting to know more and being more involved in the process this year. There certainly was an increased, not we've seen this at the state level, but certainly an increased participation by the education sector. And it paid off because the education was pretty much kept, in the process of what they developed last year as a stable funding stream, what they could expect, and they didn't cut into or change that ordinance that they put in place for 5 years last year. They didn't have end up spending a lot of their own reserves to plug a lot of holes, and they're still don't know what's going to happen because they don't know what's to come from the state. But all in all, it really was rather orderly. I think it's without question.
Were there other comments? You started by describing Assemblyman Mayfield's comments. Were there other comments that were made that we'd want to sort of deal with before we look at some of the details of the budget?
So, yeah, I think that there were some comments by, Mr. Beck was relieved. This is his last budget. He and Mr. Sykes both will term out this time. He really said that he liked all the debate. It opened his mind to different ways of thinking about things. And even Mr. Sumner, who actually made some pretty drastic amendments on the table, most of which didn't get supported, including one to dismantle the capital projects department, said he actually liked some of the points that were made from the other side. He's very encouraged about, and he's very driven to still do something about animal control. He wants to make that into more of a public-private nonprofit partnership, and that the borough use its resources for safety and enforcement. So that discussion still could come forward. In fact, Mr. Beck said he would not mind seeing that type of legislation. But I think overall, Mr. Leonard was disappointed. He wanted the mill rate to stay exactly where it was last year, although it's really very, very close to last year's mill rate, and certainly not out of line for these times. He had a focus what he wanted, and he made a last-minute amendment, not a last-minute, but kind of a last-minute, to cut another $500,000 at the discretion of the manager out of the budget that failed, and he would have brought him within his targeted mill rate. So he was a little disappointed, but again, I think he was very grateful. There was an amendment added yesterday. The public was able to see it, that included some funding for the Veterans Wall in Wasilla and the SART program and Juvenile Justice Court, which was all very important to all Assembly members, and they were unanimous in that. And the mayor, ended it by just saying that, he hopes that that the state does the right thing and comes through with their math, that they don't know the total outcome. There's going to be trouble if they don't, they'll be back at the table if they don't fund it at all, these bond debt reimbursements. He said that they'll have to revisit it. I mean, that's just the bottom line. He's not happy with the state. He thinks they're kind of copping out on this, and I think a lot of people agree with him. He also said that he really appreciated their partnerships with the school, and he does recognize they're also going to have to share some of the burden of these cuts that seem to keep coming from the state. And he was grateful for the process, and he thought it was efficient. Those are the ones that kind of stuck out. Mr. Sykes, all of them had some pretty good comments other than Mr. McKee that really didn't have. Ms. Bovey, it was her first
budget cycle, right?
Budget to undertake, and she said she learned a whole lot. She was very supportive of all the staff's support on it. There were a lot of comments about how much more transparent that they had been, and that the work of now just one person in that public affairs department is doing.
Oh yeah, he's doing a great job.
He's doing a great job, and that was brought up several times for that.
So
I think all in all, you know, it's always grueling. There's a lot of back and forth, Mike, but I think at the end of the day, everybody's relieved it's over, and you know, hoping the other shoe doesn't fall, and all the work that they've done, they don't have to revisit by.
Sure. What about people from the audience, Mr. Haberman or others speaking to any parts of this? Was there much said at Persons to Be Heard?
Well, Mr. Haberman spoke a couple of times about sort of the normal things. Elizabeth Ripley came yesterday from the Massive Health Foundation and talked about the importance of SART. There were a lot of people from Animal Control the first day of budget deliberations, because one of the amendments that Mr. Sumner had put on the table was really a significant, practically a gutting of the funding for animal control, which arguably is pretty underfunded at this point. There was a lot of testimony for Valley Recycling. Again, that was another one that was sort of in the eye of Mr. Sumner. Something was not necessary, and he tried to defund it, and at the same time, Ms. Bovee wanted to add some money because they need the support to continue doing what they're doing. And that doesn't come. It's important to know that both Animal Control and Valley Recycling doesn't affect the mill rate. Those come out of fees, but they are grant funding from the borough, but. Anyway, I think those were really big issues. That's kind of what brought the public out. I think earlier when they were just having hearings, you heard a lot from the education sector. But at the end of the day, mostly it was about animal control, Valley Recycling, and just some general comments. So really not a lot of interaction at these budget hearings. Okay. At the very end of the day.
Okay. So you've got a good overview there. I'm wondering if there are other specific items that came out and stick in your memory that have will represent either a change in the way the borough is doing business. It sounds like in most cases, like retaining the capital projects office, et cetera, that things have been kept the same with some reductions here and there. I know there's one proposal to eliminate a couple positions at GIS, the rest of those kinds of things.
That got pulled.
Okay, good.
That was pulled.
Yeah, these are things that my understanding is people don't see day-to-day in operation, but are very significant to keep the...
One that it has significance is one that Mr. Leonard brought to the table, having to do with adding a enforcement officer, compliance officer. Because, you know, we recall some of a lot of time and energy went into what was going on over on the Willowa subdivision, he was successful in that, so that added a little bit to the mill rate. But at the same time, it could be argued that you know, it's very necessary in the size of, you know, a borough of our size. So adding that position, which is not something Mr. Leonard clearly takes lightly in adding positions.
Right, right. That's interesting that he did that.
Yeah, was supported. And, you know, kind of surprising to me that at the very end they were able to do that. There was, at the very last minute, there was also a... amendment brought forward for by Mr. Not last minute, but the last day, by Mr. Mayfield. It was a $50,000 repair to the Jane Nolfe Park viewing landing that I think it was even on the news last night, that has really been in disrepair and now actually quite unsafe. And he was able to get that through. He did it, though, by making it, a lot of these things that went through, Mike, were sort of revenue neutral. You took from one and added to another one.
Okay.
So he reduced the planning and land use, some study money there, by $50,000 by putting it into capital projects.
Okay.
So that was revenue neutral. And I think it's fair to say that most of what was put on the table was that kind of an attempt, was try to make things revenue neutral by taking something from somewhere else. And at the end of the day, they don't all agree, you know, where the money should come, but it's kind of where they're at right now. I think one of the most interesting things was a piece of paper, and I'll have to send this to you, Mike, that Mr. Sykes put together, sort of the history of the mill rate of what borough residents have paid. And, you know, we ended with a 10.386 mill rate for area-wide and a 0.573 for non-area-wide. And originally, the mayor or the borough manager had put together sort of a worst-case scenario without a lot of funding, really basically no state funding in it, which would have been 11.552. And that seems like a lot, but if you, Mr. Sykes did a really good job putting together an efficient sort of a timeline of what we've paid in mill rate. And people often forget that back in 2002, the mill rate was 13.133. So the mill rate has kind of swung all over. We just had some very sweet years where we were getting a lot of state funding for capital projects and for matching money. And, you know, we were able to keep the mill rate down, but those supports are going away. So if you look at this, you know, kind of this trend, it's really not, you think about our population increases, it really is not out of line at all. And he also shows how, you know, people certainly talk about residents versus how many employees we have. And the Mattsu Borough has 334 employees per resident. And if you look up...
no, I think you've got that a little bit wrong. One employee per, yeah.
For 334 residents. And municipality of Anchorage is one for 149.
Right.
So it's very significant. Even the Fairbanks Borough is one for 246. So we are at the top stretch per employee.
Okay. Good. That's good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a lot of work done, both behind the scenes and a lead up to this, and then the good work at the table and discussion.
And the transparency that people have been wanting.
Yeah.
So, bravo.
Okay. Well, let's swing over to Tuesday night at the City of Palmer's Council Chambers. There were two meetings, actually, that were held there, and I'll talk briefly about the first one. It went on at 6, and there was a presentation by DOT. Todd was there, who's presented before the chamber, et cetera, and he did a nice job of quickly summarizing the project and its scope, but then also giving an update on its present status, on being on track, et cetera. And there were a few interesting questions that had to do with things such as the traffic lights and the poles that are being used and so on, because people could see some of the dimensions of the change that was occurring. But basically, the council was appreciative. A few members of the audience were actually able to ask questions. They went into a committee of the whole. And at this point, it would appear that everybody is saying, okay, this project is on track. There were no overriding concerns, and that was a kind of good thing to have before.
Right, he gave some, I was able to listen to pretty much all of these meetings, thankfully to the recording of Radio Free Palmer. But yeah, it was a really interesting, he laid out for me, cleared up a lot of questions about what's going to happen when and where it's going to happen and what the different lights were going to be, and just the amount of traffic, 20,000 cars, I think.
Yeah.
He said a day in the Palmer area, that was in 2014, on that Glen interchange, and expected to go up another 30,000 cars, or up to 30,000 cars in the next.
Yeah, there'll be some changes in that, and the improvements, I think, will be helpful in many ways. We then went on to the regular meeting, and there were a number of topics on the agenda, but I want to focus on one that the council spent the most time on and had the most people in the audience speak to. And that's an issue that has been sort of simmering for some time. And brief history is that in the city of Palmer, there are some homes that have changed in character. And there were a number of residents in neighborhoods that came and said, you know, what we're observing is something that we believe is criminal activity, drug activity, et cetera. And in particular, we've noted that if the police are called, they can come. But really, the police department, fine as it is, doesn't seem to be able to do very much. And so what happened then is that on the agenda, two of the city council people, Sabrina Combs and Julie Burbrick, brought over a proposal that was modeled very much on the existing ordinance over in Wasilla that deals with the issue of having a home that's repeatedly being visited by the police. And when you have very many of them, there were some proposed ideas about charging landlords and people, et cetera. Well, that was fine and good. It was laid down there, and people...
several testifiers.
Oh, many testifiers who said, who described, I think, the problem from their perspective in the neighborhood. Then the interesting comments began, and they were interesting comments by both the city manager and the chief of police. And they walked through what has always been the issue with any proposal that requires intervention. How are you going to make this this work? Where are the teeth that will actually enforce any of these guidelines that you're saying should be there? And I think Police Chief Lance Ketterling particularly showed that as he walked through, and he did it in a detailed way. First of all, the city of Wasilla and the city of Palmer both have police departments, but they're different in size, and it'd be difficult to, maybe this was the part of the issue, to take the one ordinance and move it over without really focusing on the infrastructure that would support such an ordinance. The other question was, and this came up and was asked, well, in other places that have such ordinances, how are they working, whether it's Anchorage or Wasilla? And the comments that were made suggested, well, the ordinance were there, but that didn't mean that the problem was being addressed. So after much discussion and a lack of a willingness, I think, to pass that particular ordinance as it was and just have it there, what they decided to do was develop a working group where the chief of police, others would work with the residents in a way to come up with something that could be dealt with. The problem continues to exist, and I think the frustration that was felt, whether it's at the city level, around the council table, by residents, is very real. But there wasn't a clear idea that, in particular, the resources of the city were sufficient. And these included not only people, personnel to go and visit, et cetera, but the legal process for carrying through if you are going to have an ordinance that says, here's a criteria set that if you're a drug house, now what are we going to do if it's a absentee landlord? Well, the attorney pointed out that, yeah, you can do that, but it'll just to do one suit or to have one legal action taken can take a long, long time for eviction, et cetera. So what appears to be a simple thing, and I think in the light of that discussion, many of the people who were there began to say, oh, yeah, okay, we can see that. And they were willing, I think, to spend a bit more time to produce some type of proposal that would actually work.
Well, Mike, I wasn't there, Mike. I just listened to the conversation. But I guess I sort of shared just some comments that Assemblywoman Sabrina Combs brought up, in that this piece of legislation was signed off to go on the agenda by both the manager and the police chief.
And the attorney.
Do we not pick up a phone and talk to sponsors of legislation to say, hey, I'm going to have some concerns about these, some things you should know about what you're sponsoring? That was a little disappointing.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yes,
I think that is certainly a breakdown in communication, because the way it looked like was that there was conversation between the police chief and the manager about all the reasons not to do this and all the costs, and but no communication to the sponsors of the legislation. And to me, that's such an incredible waste of public time to do that way. I mean, they don't have the limitations that the council has with the Open Meeting Act. They can talk to all members of the sitting body.
Right.
And to not sit down with these sponsors who have responded to a community outcry with concerns about what, you know, they need to consider or how they may shape what they're bringing forward, have it go a little better, to me was...
Well, that'll be interesting whether there'll be a discussion, and I would certainly encourage such a discussion about process. Sometimes there's assumptions about process. There are changes in personality, and you may have some people who are on the council or in management positions that have established that you have these informal discussions with perfectly legal, et cetera, so that as you're putting something together in a draft stage, you get feedback that helps you out. But I noted that, too. It struck me. And obviously, if you were in the room, you could see that there was some considerable concern on the part of at least one of the council members that this was being thrown back this way, where they signed off on it. And the real question was asked appropriately, well, what does signing off mean? That technically it's okay, but it really doesn't have any legs. Mm-hmm. Interesting point, yes.
Yeah, I think that was the glaring thing to me. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, they were all, as you said, in agreement, we should continue to work on this. I mean, a lot of it is also about a bigger question, Mike, is that Palmer's changing.
Oh, yes.
Whether we like to acknowledge that or not, there are a lot of changes in our community. And as are a lot of communities are all having some pressures that we've never had to deal with before. And I think Councilwoman Combs brought that up. We do have a homeless population. We do have more crime, and we have to figure out a way to respond to it. And if this is not the vehicle, because it does change the way we sort of have a really light hand in dealing with people that don't exactly do things the right way for the community, then, you know, it's up to kind of the manager and the police chief and others that have to do the work to come with some suggestions for it, and that they work together collaboratively. So that was sort of my take.
Okay, two good meetings. Nice discussion. We're just about out of time here, Citizen Lobbyists. Look forward to seeing if we think about these things a bit more next week. But have a good day out there.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at RadioFreePalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@RadioFreePalmer.org.